on the AM and FM 107 Radio Network, broadcasting from AM and FM stations around the country. Welcome to the Small Business Administration award-winning School for Startups Radio, where we talk all things small business and entrepreneurship. Now, here is your host, the guy that believes anyone can be a successful entrepreneur, because entrepreneurship is not about creativity, risk, or passion, Jim Beach.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another exciting edition of School for Startups Radio. I hope you're having a great day out there. We're getting ready for the holiday fun and making some money along the way. You know, we still have another week or so when you can do some business. I hope you are getting all of your goals met and hitting your numbers and all of that. I have a great show for you today. We have several things we're going to do. First, we have William C. Davis of williamcdavis.net, who has a new leadership book out. I will introduce him in just a second, so I won't waste the time now, but very good conversation on empathy, building relationships, credibility. Great conversation. After that, we're going to play a quick 10 and then learn a little bit more about Claude AI. It's one of the new competing AIs. And so Stuart Draper is going to play the quick 10 and then explain Claude to us as sort of a bonus discussion there. We still have not had a winner on the quick 10, but Stuart said he was going to, so we'll see what happens there. And then we have a greatest hits from 2015. This is a 10-year-old interview, so listen to how different I am. The interviewee is James Siminoff, the founder of Ring Doorbell. And it's interesting in this conversation, he is just about to sell the business. He knows that. I think I know that, and I'm asking it. He can't tell it because of course, the rules and regulations. And so it's an interesting conversation. Listen out for that part. But he is now, I guess, a billionaire from Ring and has done incredibly well with it. So great, great to have him back in a 15-year-old fashion to kind of get a check-in then and see what he was doing right as he was selling the business and becoming a billionaire. All right, great show. We'll get started in just a second. Please go buy the book, Real Environmentalist. Please, 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 we need to sell more. It's a great book about environmental entrepreneurs that are saving the earth.
Introducing The Real Environmentalists, the bold new book by Jim Beach. It's not about activists, politicians, or professors. It's about the entrepreneurs, real risk takers, building cleaner, smarter solutions, not for applause, but for profit. The entrepreneurs in the book aren't giving speeches. They're in labs, factories, and offices, cleaning the past and building clean products for the future. The Real Environmentalists is available now because the people saving the planet aren't the ones you think. Go to Amazon and search for Real Environmentalist. Thank you.
We are back, and again, thank you so very much for being with us. Very excited to introduce my first guest today. His name is William Davis. He is a leadership expert with an incredible background and pedigree, 40 years in the corporate world, where he learned the difference between managers who hold authority and managers who earn loyalty. There's a huge difference there. He was able to maintain 90% retention for decades. As a manager himself, he is author of How to Lead Without Just Managing and Building Genuine Relationships. And he is the founder of the Leadership Blueprint. Very impressive. William, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Good, Jim. How are you doing?
I'm very well. Thank you. So what is the state of leadership today?
Well, many people believe we have a leadership crisis. In 2023, the World Economic Forum actually came out of their yearly session in Switzerland, you know, claiming we had a world leadership crisis. It wasn't just corporate. It was all across the spectrum. And in the same year, the U.S. News World Report Harris Poll came out with a U.S.-based sampling. 86% were disappointed in leaders. 78% felt like we had a crisis in corporate America. So obviously there's something missing.
Is that our leaders like Trump and Pelosi and all of those people? Or does that mean the personal leader that I have in my office?
That's a personal, yeah. Oh, absolutely. That's a personal leader you have in your office. From a governmental perspective, there were actually 84% that thought we had a leadership crisis, which I thought that was a little low based upon the state
obvious.
Of things.
Duh.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, my focus has always been from a corporate perspective. But yes, we have, and even in the family, you can talk about the fact that we have leadership crises there.
All right. But we have so many gurus and books now. There's never been more gurus and books, William. So why are we at a crisis?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that we look at the wrong thing as far as building leaders and then them connecting to their folks. We are such a society where everything's the bottom line. What is the profit margin and how do you contribute to that? And if you don't contribute to that, how do we improve it or move you out? Where really we need to focus on leadership has and will always be about building the human relationship. If I can build a relationship with my team or with whatever group I'm leading, then the success that I can have with them is astronomical, because I create a authentic relationship where they believe that I am invested in them, and then they are invested in helping me help them be successful. And I think that's just, you look at today where, we've gone to these stacked rankings. And it's like everything that we can do to make it about corporate, make it about money, and we forget about the fact that it's the people that actually bring the success.
All right. Is leadership born, a trait that you're born with, or can I learn it?
I think there are certain aspects of it, Jim, that are something you either have or you don't. I think empathy is probably the first one that I would list. Again, people are either have the ability to be empathetic to others and understand challenges that they have and how it relates to how they work day to day, or they don't. There are some attributes I think that you can learn, but if you don't have the basics of care, being able to care about other people, being able to understand that leadership is about you helping them be successful, not about you being yourself successful, then you're going to have a struggle.
I think you said that wrong, William. I'm pretty sure you said that wrong. Leadership is about making me more successful. I could care less about you. Why do I think you said that wrong. Go back and say
well,
that again.
I go back to me as a leader. I am concerned.
Here,
yeah. Okay. Gotcha. All right. All right.
Play
got
along
me.
With me. Though.
No, again, and that's what a lot of people view is that they view their team as the competition. And as my team has success, as my individual people have success, it threatens them. And, in my career, I can't even begin to tell you how many people that worked for me passed me by. And that was exciting for me because it meant that I allowed them to spread their wings and grow and do what they wanted to do in their career. And they could do it here with me. Didn't feel like they had to go off somewhere else and do it.
Well, but then you don't get the raise.
Well, and sometimes that just happens. Leadership is again about the fact of, hey, let's be successful together. And that was always the first thing I told my folks is we win together, we lose together. If we stumble, we fix it and we move on. And if somebody's going to end up having to take a hit, that's going to be me because I'm the leader of this group. But you guys, I'm not going to penalize you for taking risks. I'm not going to penalize you for being innovative. And if, again, everything in the corporate world that you deal with is fixable. I don't care how, what people say, it's fixable. And you just have to be able to, keep your emotions under control. Don't fly off the handle when something goes wrong. And that allows your people to understand that, hey, I have flexibility here to try to do this the right way.
It seems to me that anything that you can have empathy over is illegal to talk about.
Oh, anymore. It certainly is. And I understand that there are certain lines that you have to be careful that you don't cross with individuals. But, you know, when somebody and everybody has good days, bad days, and you as a leader have to be able to get them through those, right? Especially the bad days where they don't hurt themselves on the other side, their career, the work you're doing, et cetera. And while there is a line, I as a leader have to understand, one, the challenge the person is dealing with is real to them. I may think it's silly, but it's real to them. And as being real to them, they need to have it resolved. So to the extent I can, I help direct them, whether it's the HR within the company, whether it's outside organizations that might be able to help them with whatever the issue is. Because generally, when somebody is having a challenge like that, or crisis like that, they're not thinking necessarily about what's the solution outside of themselves fixing it. And that is one thing I can contribute as a leader, is to help them get through it.
Yes, but how do you even get to the point of knowing that their kid is at home having trouble with school if you're not allowed to ask, do you have children?
Well, I don't ask them that. Let me give you an example. I had a young lady who came to work for me. She was very young, but very, very smart and did just excellent in the interview. And when she came to work for me, she began to constantly bring, you know, everything to my attention and say, is this okay? Is this okay? Is this okay? And I'm like, okay, that's not what I expect, right? I want her to be independent and do what she needs to do. So I established a relationship with her based on what made her comfortable. I didn't bring her in my office. I didn't bring her in a boardroom and say, let's talk. She liked to walk every day at lunch. So I just asked her one day, can I go with you? And we did. And finally, about the third time around the lake, I said, okay, help me understand why you constantly ask for my approval. And all of a sudden, I mean, the waterworks just poured out. The person that she'd had prior to me was such a horrendous micromanager and so controlling that everything she did, regardless of how little or how big it was, he had to approve. So when you're able to establish a relationship with someone based by making them comfortable enough to feeling like they can share with you without, something bad coming from it, then you're able to then get into those type of situations where you understand what's going on in their life. Absolutely, you got to be careful because HR and some people are very litigious and will do everything they can to knock you down. But it doesn't mean that you can't try to establish the relationship to make the person comfortable enough to be able to share with you.
All right. Well, you mentioned empathy, and we know that you have the blueprint. Is the blueprint a list of things that we can put down like empathy that we need to focus on?
Yes.
The blueprint, or will my fingers get bluish?
Well, your fingers will probably get bluish. There's a lot of things I talk about in regards to like building the relationship correctly, like we were just talking about. And, you know, as you build that relationship, you build trust, you build a credibility with your people because you're treating them like they want to be treated. Again, golden rule, do unto others. And you treat them like they matter. And you do that by, you know, giving them public recognition, you know, and it may be just small things, but hey, you know, this is, you know, important. You did it. You were successful. Be proud of it. And I think one of the challenges that we have is we always wait to the end of a project or the end of work, sampling and say, okay, now we can celebrate. No, celebrate the little wins along the way, because that means so much to people. It gives them the, you know, feeling that, hey, I'm contributing, I'm doing something worthwhile. And so when you do that and you give them public recognition, you also inspire them to be creative. And that's one thing I think people get so frustrated about. They're told to do something, but they're not told why. And that's important to understand the why of what I'm doing, because when I understand the why, I'm able to then look outside the box and say, okay, how can I creatively maybe do this more efficiently, right? And then you as a leader give them that ability to do that. and not, you know, if something goes sideways, don't slam them because of it. Say, okay, let's go back and let's start over, or let's do it again. And, you know, it's all those type of things that help build up the human feeling of themselves doing the right thing, being recognized, and feeling like they're important doing something.
Yes, it is absolutely critical. And the why is so important. And even in, you know, lecturing in school and stuff, the kids need to know why it's important
that they absolutely
learn about Japanese business. You know,
you bet. Yeah.
That was beat into my head early on. So, what do we do when we have problems? Employees that are just, you know, don't belong, shouldn't be there in the first place, and they are challenging us and our leadership. What do we do?
Well, I would encourage people first, you know, when you're challenged, make sure you don't overreact, because someone challenging you is not necessarily a hit on your authority or questioning your authority. It may, again, be them trying to understand the why, right? So, you know, just dig deeper. Just say, okay, let's sit down and talk about where your concerns are and what we can do to improve. You know, you go through a patient process to try to help them, you know, understand why you're doing what you're doing and how you're doing it and why you're doing it that way. And then you get to the point where they're just, you know, continue to push back and push back or cause disruptions. You end up just, you have to move them out. Because at the end of the day, as much as you try to build the relationship properly and make it work, you cannot allow it to be detrimental to the overall team.
How do I pass leadership on?
Well, that's a great question. I think, you know, the first thing I always say is to pass leadership on to someone, they have to want to be a leader, because leadership's the job, right? You know, managers, and when I talk about managers and bosses and leaders in my first book, I talk very specifically about, you know, leaders are different than managers and bosses as far as their mentality goes. Managers focus on tasks, getting the work done. Leaders focus on their people. So if I want to be a leader, I have to have that mentality that I want to see others succeed and I want to help them get there. So make sure first the person you're choosing or mentoring to be a leader has that mentality. They want it for the right reason, not for the pay, not for the title, not for the, you know, perceived authority, you know, or to your point earlier, the extra pay, but that they're really wanting to invest in people and give back. And one of the ways I look at people to determine whether that is a sincere motive or not is I look at how do they deal with their family and their closest friends. Because if they can't deal with their family and closest friends in a respectful, courteous, kind way, I can't ever expect them to do that with people that they don't really even have association or relationship with. So to me, that's, you know, that's big red X number one, and really kind of pushes them out of the way. So if you get somebody that is sincere, you just mentor them. Again, it's helping them understand the thought process that you have and what you're doing, why you're doing it. Give them, you know, increased responsibilities, whether it's, you know, incrementally at a time, or you give them something big and, you know, challenge them. But again, it's giving them the ability to grow or fail on their own. When they fail, you pick them up. You don't slam them. You criticize them. You know, you help teach them, okay, here's what went wrong and here's how we improve it or do better next time.
One of the biggest mistakes is when you are just incorrect and you think you're something that you're not. You think you're a really good boxer, but you're not. You're going to get beat up. Or you think you're really good at three card Monty and you're on the streets of New York. You're going to come home poor, right? What happens when I think I'm a leader and I'm not? Do we have that category? Do you know that person? I've met that person.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've met a bunch of them. And if they're sincere, they will understand and acknowledge it and look to seek improvement. You do have those that are just so arrogant that they think that they are the greatest thing since sliced bread. And, you know, that's one of those deals where you have to sometimes go around them as you know, someone who's an underling to them when they're just completely detrimental to the team and kind of be a leader yourself, become a leader yourself to those around you. But if you realize you're not a leader, but you're really sincere about wanting to be one and you want to improve, again, you seek out somebody that you respect as a leader and you know, look at them and see what they do and how they do it, and try to understand the whys and, you know, seek counsel. You know, I've never been blamed about being the smartest person in the room. Never will. You can ask anybody that ever worked for me. But, you know, what I did do was own my own mistakes. And if I found myself lacking, I sought out someone who wasn't lacking in that area and tried to learn from them and tried to emulate how they did it.
How does the military do, in your opinion?
Well, certainly the understanding of taking care of your men first, you know, particularly in the chow hall, I always heard the comment, you know, officers make sure their men eat first, right? Their men are taken care of. And I think, you know, that's certainly a commendable attitude and something that is important, but it's got to be more than that. It's got to be, again, you know, yes, there's the mission. Yes, there's something we have to accomplish, but we don't unnecessarily put our people in peril. And I think we have had a number of cases throughout our history where we probably made the wrong decision in that regard because, you know, I myself aren't going into that position. I'm sending somebody else. So what do I care? Or I don't consider the cost.
Right. Ooh, that sucks.
Yeah.
You don't normally, I don't normally think of the military doing that so much as, I don't know.
Well, I think, maybe intentional sense or whatever, but, you know, when you don't do your due diligence, right, on a battle plan or you know, that your next step of what you're doing, you know, it can really cause some harm.
What are the blind spots that we have about our leadership?
Well, I think the first blind spot is assuming that somebody has a title, has a corner office, has all the money in the world, is good at what they do, or is a good leader. Because I think you and I talked about that earlier. There's plenty of indication that that's not the case. And so, you know, give deference to them, but don't, you know, buy into the everything they do is right and they can never make mistakes, because that's just that this doesn't work. And in doing that, you make sure that you are continually looking for ways to improve, not just yourself, but maybe the work that you're doing. I think the second thing is understand that leaders make mistakes, and too many of them are not willing to own their own mistakes. They've always got an excuse. They've always got a reason. It's always somebody else's fault. And so, you know, leaders can make mistakes too, and just as easily and oftentimes in a lot more prominent way than, you know, the people that they lead. So again, if you're a leader, own up to it. You know, you're allowed to make mistakes. You don't have to be perfect. And so when you do that, again, you're buying credibility. You're creating trust with your folks, those that you deal with. And they're a lot more willing to go to bat for you and help move mountains than they would be if you weren't that way.
And finally, what do I do in a crisis, William? What's the best leadership plan in a crisis?
Yeah, the first thing that you do is you keep calm yourself. Now, every crisis is just something that's gone wrong and it can be fixed. And so your response to it, sets the tone for your team or for those who are working on it. So if you're calm, you're deliberate, you are working as a group to get it resolved as opposed to trying to pick and choose or find somebody to blame for where you're at, the situation is going to get resolved a whole lot quicker and a whole lot smoother than if you fly off the handle, you try to do it all yourself, you overreact, because in overreacting, people lose confidence in not just themselves, but they lose confidence in you. And then things continue to go wrong as opposed to getting resolved.
Very well said. William, how do we find out more, follow you online, get a copy of the books, get in touch, etc.?
Yeah, Jim, I really appreciate it, and thank you for having me on. I have a website. It's called williamcdavis.net, williamcdavis.net. It has all my keynotes, my workshops, my appearances on podcasts, and there's also a link there to my books out on Amazon.
Fantastic. William, thank you so very much. We'd love to have you back, and happy holidays.
Thank you. You too, Jim.
And we will be right back.
Well, Jim, I'm so excited for my favorite part of your show, which is the Quick 10 game.
Oh, you want to play?
Can we do it?
Let's go right now. Number one, your favorite creative. Oh, I forgot. Do you want to accept the wager?
Oh, what's the wager?
The standard bet that everyone else makes.
Which is?
You know, the bet on the outcome that everyone else does.
I've got the bet. I'm in.
There you go. Number one, your favorite creativity hack.
Favorite creativity hack, get outside. Adventure is where I have found that I get the most creative.
Number two, favorite bootstrapping trick.
Oh, man. Utilize your network. You have to go to friends and family first and connect that way.
Number three, name your top passions.
Oh, my wife, my kids, my faith, my hobby of boating and my hobby of baseball.
Number four, the first three steps in starting a business are
sales first, then figuring out the type of entity to create. And then, geez, I guess it goes product, sales, and then legal in that order.
Number five, the best way to get your first real customer is?
Best way to get your first real customer is ask. Too many people are afraid to ask.
Number six, your dreamiest technology is?
Claude AI. I am absolutely in love with what Claude can do for me.
Number eight, worst entrepreneurial mistake?
Worst entrepreneurial mistake is partnership without contract.
Number nine, favorite entrepreneur and why?
Elon Musk, because he does not need to be one, but he's changing the world by continuing to have influence versus sitting back and relaxing on a beach.
Number 10, favorite superhero.
My favorite superhero are my parents. I'm giving a two for one there. My parents are my superhero.
Fantastic. While we calculate the answer or the score, how do we get in touch with you? Find out more.
All yes. So if you search up Startups with Stu, you will find me. My name is Stuart Draper. I'm on LinkedIn if you want to search up that way, but Startups with Stu, go find that on Google. You'll find the podcast. You'll find my website, all that good stuff.
Fantastic. I'm just kind of pausing until, oh, Stuart, I am so bummed. Oh, this is devastating. You got a 94. 94, it's an excellent score, but you have to have a 95 to win the wager. Apparently, we had a judge from Wisconsin that doesn't like people from Idaho or something. So I don't know what that's about. But anyway, we always play for a Tesla. So thank you for that. I'll look forward to receiving one in the mail soon.
Hey. 94 out of 100 is an A. I'll take the A. I'm an A student. So there we go.
Great answers. Why is Claude so much better than other AIs? Pitch Claude to me.
Oh, the thing that I love about Claude is that it is such a good language learning model. The actual text that it writes back is written in such good English that makes perfect sense to me. And then I've been able to utilize my favorite thing to do with it is to run a business idea through it. So if I'm considering investing in a business or if I'm considering starting a business, I just walk through every last question, and it does such a good job of not just giving me the answer, but then thinking ahead of time about the next questions it needs to be asking me and get to the best possible final business plan. And I recommend it for every new founder. No founder should ever start a business after 2024 without using an AI to help you think it through. So
great suggestion. Stuart, thank you so much for being with us. Startups with Stu. Thanks a lot, Stu. We love to have you back.
Jim Beach, thanks. You're the man. Appreciate you.
And we will be right back.
Well, that's a wonderful question, actually, Jim.
Oh my gosh, I love the opportunity to do this. Thank you, Jim.
Wow, that's a great one.
You know, that is a phenomenal question.
That's a great question, and I don't have a great answer.
That's a great question.
Oh, that is such a loaded question, and that's actually a really good question.
School for Startups Radio.
And welcome back to School for Startups Radio. Thank you again so much for being with us today. I hope you're using today to stay motivated, go out there and start a company and take over the world. I am very excited and honored to introduce you to my first guest today. His name is James Siminoff, and you saw him on Shark Tank about a year or so ago. He has a company called Ring, which is an incredible addition to the safety of your home. The company is called Bot Home Automation, and James has won tons of awards. He's not only been on Shark Tank, but I think Jay Leno made fun of him. There was a Jay Leno reference. And also Time Magazine called it one of the top 10 gadgets of last year. James, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Thanks for having me.
I am excited to learn about you and the product. Let's start right there. Tell us about the birth of Ring, how you got the idea for it, how you found a manufacturer. Just walk us through the whole thing.
Sure. So Ring is Ring is a smart doorbell, so it allows you to see and speak to visitors from anywhere using your smartphones or tablets. It just goes over your Wi-Fi in your house. And the idea came, I'd sold a company and was working in my garage, and I was missing every visitor, package, everything that was coming. And so I literally just went on and started looking for a video doorbell that would go to my phone, because I thought it would be a great solution. And it was one of those things where I just couldn't believe it wasn't out there already. And ended up becoming something that I ended up building and then, you know, marketing. And so 3 years later now, here we are.
All right. And to describe it in a little more detail. So over the Wi-Fi in my home from vacation in Mexico on my iPad, I can answer my door. Is that the idea, Jim? You go by Jim or James.
Yeah. And it's both the video and also the audio. So you can fully answer it. It really allows you to sort of be always home. If the guest is someone or the visitor is someone who wants to leave a package, you can ask them to leave the package and then call a neighbor and have to pick it up. Or if it's someone who's checking to see if the house is occupied, you can act as if the house is occupied.
Yeah. You can pretend that you are at home. I'll be downstairs in a minute. Just leave it there for me right now and I'll come get it in a minute or something like that.
Exactly.
I love it. All right. So how has the product been received? Obviously it's won all sorts of awards. How many have you sold?
So we've sold a lot. I think our last announcement was that we sold over like 40 something thousand units.
And how are you doing that? Is it online or retail? What's your distribution at this point?
Yeah, so historically, so far, we've been actually just direct online on our website, which is ring.com. And we now are just starting to get into retail. We'll probably start to be into major retailers just in like May, June, and July. And the way it works with retailers is you know, this is shipped to their warehouses. So we're starting to ship to warehouses now, and then you'll put the stores about 2 or 3 months after that.
Okay. And do we know what stores are going to be doing it yet?
They haven't announced any of the stores yet, but I mean, some of the bigger national chains, the electronics chains, big hardware store chains. We'll probably be in about 5,000 plus stores by the summer.
Awesome. Well, congratulations on that, James. It's an amazing accomplishment. Let's switch gears a little bit. Tell us about the Shark Tank experience. Did you get a deal? Who was it with? What were they like? Did they treat you fairly in the edit process? All that kind of stuff.
Sure. So it was, first of all, it was an amazing experience. I was a big fan of the show, before. I've watched for a long time, so I kind of already liked the show, and actually really was a sort of a fan of it. We were very lucky to get on it. I mean, there's, I think, the year that we went on, I think 40,000 inventors and entrepreneurs applied. Sometimes luck plays a big role in success, and that was one of those times. Once you get accepted, I think a little known fact is that, you know, they basically accept you and ask you to come in and tape, and it's a pretty big, grueling process to get ready for taping. After you tape, only a certain percentage of people actually air. So it's not even all the people that that tape even go, you know, get on to the actual TV. So it's kind of it's a crazy, stressful process. The actual being on the show, they tape you for about an hour. It is totally kind of live. They don't stop it. They don't ask you to repeat yourself or, you know, can you make this moment better with, you know, can you and Mark Cuban stand this way when you talk or anything like that. So it's a fully real and very stressful environment. It's probably the most stressful thing that any entrepreneur can do, because when you're usually pitching your company to investors or venture capitalists or anyone like that, even being on a radio show, you're not trying to be kind of witty with every answer. And when you're on Shark Tank, because they're cutting it down from about an hour to, let's say, about 12 minutes, you want every one of those sound bites really good. And you also want to make sure you air. And so if you have to give them enough to make sure that it's a good segment. So it was a really, really stressful thing to do for an hour, to sit there and answer questions in that way.
And did you get a deal?
So Mr. Wonderful gave us a offer for a deal, but it was one of those kind of royalty slash whatever.
$87 for every unit you sell in perpetuity, and then I get your firstborn child.
Exactly. So we ended up turning that down. But you know, the exposure from being on Shark Tank, I mean, the awareness and credibility that you get from being on that show is like nothing. I don't think there is a single thing that an entrepreneur can do that is as powerful as Shark Tank is today. It just really is. There's just nothing out there that gives you that sort of that steroid injection in your company like they do.
Right. Well, they call it the Shark Tank effect.
Yep.
Even though you didn't get a deal, it still helped you get into these five big box retailers, I would assume. Was that critical?
Yeah, I mean, it really was like an injection of adrenaline. I mean, it increased our sales, which allowed us to hire more, you know, higher end, more engineers, things like that, which allowed us to build a better product. It gave us a credibility that when we did walk into a big retailer that, you know, they'd already seen us, and that there was this kind of, effect from that of, you know, everyone. I mean, there are a lot of people out there that like the show and a lot of big executives that like the show. And, you know, you go to a retailer and, you know, you get the biggest buyer, for example, and a retailer would never come to a meeting like this. And they come because, you know, they say, yeah, I saw you on Shark Tank. I was sitting with my family watching it. It's so cool. What do you really think when Mr. Wonderful said this? And so obviously that doesn't hurt you when you're there, because, you know, as a nobody company, typically you walk in and you have to, you know, claw your way up, and instead you're kind of coming from the opposite side. So yeah, I don't think it can be understated how important it is for a company to be on, you know, a show like Shark Tank, where you have just all of that in one shot is kind of incredible.
And then what did Jay Leno say about you?
So Jay Leno actually was really funny. It was totally random, and we had no idea it was going to happen. It was when Justin Bieber was throwing the eggs at his neighbor's house.
Right.
And so they took our 3-minute video and cut it up and basically made it like a funny video of Bieber getting caught on the doorbot, you know, with the throwing the eggs.
Okay.
And so it was this, you know, it was really, really, I mean, it was part of his monologue. It was right at the end. I think it was the last 2 weeks before he went off air. So it was kind of a really cool thing to, you know, be able to kind of sneak in and actually have been on, you know, in essence on Jay Leno. You know, because obviously that's not going to happen anymore now that he's gone. So.
Well, he'll come back with another product soon, I bet. I wouldn't be surprised. But that is cool as hell to be made fun of as a, you know, as one of the things. I was actually referenced in a David Letterman top 10 list as one of the dorkiest things in the world. I was teaching a class at a university, and we were doing a study abroad, and all of the students got iPads. Maybe it was iTouches or something, the latest, whatever it was at the time, as part of the curriculum. And Letterman made fun of me in a top 10 list. So we were all very proud of that. Anyway, you're right. Yeah, that is just an incredible thing for your company. That's really cool. So
it also just shows, I mean, you know, it shows that Shark Tank effect and obviously what else, all this other stuff that we've done, that we've been able to break into, you know, really be kind of the leader of our space, which is sort of, you know, the front entrance monitoring doorbell, you know, smart doorbell. So, you know, it's kind of, you know, when you see a Jay Leno, you know, using your stuff as a way to do a gag, I mean, obviously, you know, able to break into another level of sort of, you know, in your startup. So yeah, definitely kind of a fun thing.
Yeah, the next thing you can hope for is to be a Saturday Night Live skit somehow.
That is definitely, that would be top on the list.
Yeah. You should send a free product to everyone on the cast.
Yeah, not a bad idea.
Yeah, it's Studio 8H30 Rockefeller Center, New York, New York, right? And just drop off 100 at the door.
I might be doing it.
Well, if you do, I want credit in your marketing campaign, okay?
I'm happy to give you credit.
What's next for the company then, James? Do you have other cool products in mind in the home automation space, or do you run with this? What are your thoughts?
I think it's funny. I think the easy thing is to have lots of other cool products in mind. I think the hard thing is to stay focused. So we're going to go the harder route, which is to actually stay focused. And really build a company and not just sort of scattershot a lot of products. I think, you know, as a small company, we're 53 people now, you can't be launching, you know, 10 different products in the home. I mean, even a company like Nest, which is an 800-person company, you know, they only have really 2 products in the market, and they bought Dropcam as their third. So, you know, it's really tough to get this stuff right. And so we're going to really stay focused just on this doorbell, smart doorbell market. We will, you know, come out with a different version, you know, every X years, and we'll, you know, upgrade obviously stuff inside of it as better chips come out and take advantage of technology. But we're really going to stay, highly focused on the door entry side of things.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. I love the focus. It's certainly what the books at a school like Babson would teach us to do. Did you take entrepreneurship classes? I am referencing, of course, your undergraduate experience at Babson, which is the number one entrepreneurship place in the world. I don't think that really anyone will dispute that when it comes to a university. You won't dispute that, of course, James. And did you learn stuff like that there?
I did. It was, I think that people always ask, you know, like, how can you go to school for entrepreneurship? And I think that the reality is you can't go to school, for entrepreneurship in terms of you're not going to, get taught how to be able to deal with the mental side of actually starting a company or having that passion of starting a company. But you can learn things like not running out of cash, legal things, like, you know, stuff like that. And I think that's where Babson definitely does help, is they are able to, teach you these pieces. And so I definitely learned, you know, a lot of that sort of, I guess, that discipline of being an entrepreneur at Babson, I think.
All right. Well, that's really interesting. They certainly produce great conferences and other products. So I think that they're doing a great job. Let me ask you about the funding for Ring. How has this company been financed, and how have you gotten financed 53 employees? What can you tell us about that?
So it's been financed in every possible way you can imagine. So I financed it to start myself. We then raised a little money. We did do some pre-sales. The company has been out of cash, I think, 3 or 4 times, where we basically ran the well dry and were able to get the next amount in. At this point now, I think we're hopefully out of that sort of those issues happening. But as a young sort of hardware company, it is very difficult. These companies do take a ton of cash to build properly. I mean, the engineering resources that you need, the R&D, it's really kind of an incredible amount of cash companies going.
And you mentioned before that you sold a company and were working out of your garage. Did you put some of your own startup capital in it? Did you fund it a little bit at the beginning with prior asset sales?
I did. I funded it in the beginning, and then when we points where we kind of ran out of capital, I bridged the company a few times personally, to make sure we got through these things. And it's people always ask, how do you do this? How do you do that? As trying to figure out startups. And the reality is, they're really difficult. And, I don't know if we would have survived if I hadn't had another exit and been able to personally write some checks in. Because, especially typically when you're doing that is when the company's not looking very good. It's, partly why you're out of money, and also because, you're in these in-between stages of, before you launch a product, before you ship. And so sometimes you have to be able to do that. But it is very hard to, especially hardware companies are very hard to make work because of the capital requirements.
And 53 employees, how has the HR issue been for you? Has that been easy? Has it been a hard one to find employees? How's that been?
I'm also fortunate. I've been an entrepreneur now since college. So I think that's 15 years I've had the different businesses. And so a lot of the people that work with me today have worked with me at companies that I've run or co-founded or been part of over the last 15 years. So a lot of the core team are people that kind of I've had some working knowledge with. And I think, again, another thing is I think a lot of it, a lot of being an entrepreneur is that it's not an overnight success, that it takes time to build up a lot of these things. Now, some people are lucky and they'll hit it right off the bat. They'll get a company, and in the first few years it'll become worth a lot of money and be very successful, and they'll have a great team. But I think for a lot of us, including myself, I think it takes time to build those things up. And it is very hard to hire 53 people if they're all people that you don't know, especially at the senior level, because how do you work with these people? Do they culturally fit? Do they are they on track? As you are on what you're building as a company. And so I think it is very, very hard to just do that overnight. And that's, I've had an advantage in that of being able to have history with people and know how they're going to react to situations and be able to, build something with them.
And it's interesting, you referred earlier to the role of luck in your success. It's kind of like the duck, James, calm above the water, paddling like hell underneath, and I just don't believe you. Luck has nothing to do with your success. I'm going to call you a BSer.
Yeah. Luck has everything. I mean, I was actually just talking to I was with someone this weekend who's an extremely wealthy person and has been beyond successful, and, said the same thing. I think success comes from, it comes from hard work, for sure. I really haven't seen very few people that didn't work hard that were successful. Comes from passion, of being able to really sort of, follow through. Focus is another big one. And then luck, though, you need to have luck. There are a lot of smart people who worked really hard and had great ideas and have failed miserably all their lives and have ended up not being, let's say, quote unquote, successful in terms of having either the monetary or, the impact that their startups or their companies should have had. And I think that has to do with luck. I think luck plays a big role in it. And I think we have to appreciate the fact that you can't be so smart as to not have some luck on your side.
Can you create your luck Does luck come to those who are searching for it?
I think luck comes to people that work really hard and are, and you know, passion. And the reason passion works so well is because without passion, you'll give up. And when you give up, you can no longer have any luck on your side because you've given up. But I think between, you know, I think hard work and passion are two things that I see commonality amongst many different sort of entrepreneurs. And I think it's lack of luck. I think the longer you stay at something, the more chances you have of having luck. But I do think that there is lucky component to it that you just can't dismiss. Because, and again, I think the proof of that is there are a lot of very successful, extremely smart, way smarter than I am, entrepreneurs and founders who have started, you know, a company that goes to billions of dollars in revenue or exit or whatever. And then the next two or three companies they do are just complete failures. And I think a lot of that is luck. And then you'll see, you know, the same idea that they had that failed, someone does, you know, 2 years later, the timing of something else out of everyone's control was better. And then that company ends up becoming a huge success. So I think, you know, just luck, they do it. And timing, hey, timing is part of luck. Out of our control. Time things, you really can't time them. And, you know, that is timing of a startup, of an idea, of a whatever, it really does play into the success of what it's going to be.
You're breaking up a little bit, James. You with us?
Sorry about that. Yeah, I can hear.
Okay. Oh, I agree with you. I think luck is a huge part of it. It's certainly very interesting the way you describe it. And I found some great Twitter moments in there. At what age did you realize you were not going to be going down the traditional path, not going to be a normal office worker, peon, plebeian, pawn in the world there, James?
I think I kind of always was this. I mean, I was always, even in high school, I was selling something or doing something, or, you know, I was like on the way to school, I used to clean out horse stalls in the morning so I could make some money there. And then I just always was like flipping, doing something to make money, to do something. I was always building stuff in the basement. So I think I was just the kind of person that really fit into a corporation. I think that's, you know, I think I went more of founding businesses because I just didn't really, I don't think I could have gotten a job. And I don't, you know, it was almost the opposite. It wasn't that I such a maverick that I thought I could start companies. I think I was more that I just felt like I would just never see an interview.
Well, I was fortunate. I got run out of Coca-Cola. They told me I should go be an entrepreneur. And I was like, entrepreneur? What? I've never heard that word before. And so I learned early at 24, 25 that the corporate life was not going to work for me. So I'm exactly right there with you, James. How can we find out more about you, follow you on Twitter, check you out on Facebook, look up The Ring, buy a ring, all that kind of stuff?
So it's ring.com, which is hopefully as easy of a domain as you can have. Everything is there. I am lightly on Twitter, Jamie Siminoff, one word, at Jamie Siminoff. Not a huge social sort of public guy that way. Other than that, you can find everything at ring.com, and my email address is there and everything else. So from that side, everyone can get in contact with me if they want to.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for being on the show today. You've been a great guest. Thank you so much for the information and the stories, the Shark Tank experience. And I hope you'll come back on the show when you sell your 100,000th unit.
I will absolutely do that. Thank you so much.
Excellent. We are out of time for today, but back tomorrow. That's what we do every day. Have a great day, everybody. Go make $1 million. Have some holiday fun and take care of your family. Bye now.